welcome to the post round six Your Supercoach Coach podcast. I'm joined by Mark this week.
How you going, Marcus?
Not too bad, thanks. I scored 2052 on the weekend, so shot me up 1100 spots and sitting in the top 1000 at 548th. Very happy man at the moment, as you can probably tell. I know you didn't do quite as good, Mark, so here's your chance to vent.
No venting, mate. I'm happy to see you do well. Although a bit disappointed that you're in front of me. I had a horrible week. I've had a couple of bad weeks in a row. Scored 1857, dropped down to outside the top 2000. So I've dropped a long way in the last 3 or 4 weeks. It's really disappointing on the weekend because I did design my team around round six. I specifically picked people for that round that weren't going to have the bye. Then I had Grundy pull out at the last minute, which cost me a premium up back. Goods, who I picked almost specifically for round six, goes out and scores 47, and also made a poor decision with rookies here and there. So, yeah, not overly happy with this week, but there's always next week, mate, and I'm not too far away.
Yeah. All right, we'll talk mostly upgrades this show because all the multi-buy rounds are done with, and we're starting to see some of the rookies hit their peak, so that's pretty much going to be the focus of our show. We'll start off in the back line and talking about Andy Otten, because I know a lot of people hung on to him, even though he was out last week. He's now listed still as another week or two away with a knee injury. Mark, how do you see Andy Otten at the moment?
Yeah, I think that the fact that there's a few good options to trade in coming through means that you'd definitely be looking to get rid of him in the next week or two, I'd say. It was interesting that because he got injured last week, it meant that a lot of people went to Luke Thompson, and a lot of that was almost more luck than anything else, and Luke Thompson went out and absolutely smashed it last week. So those that already have traded would be very happy, but there are some other options available this week, and I'd be looking to get rid of him either this week or next, I think.
I brought Luke Thompson in myself, so I'd like to say it wasn't luck, but I did bring him in for code. So, yeah, he did great on the weekend, scoring that 126. And although you only gained 30,000 for the Otten down to Thompson trade, how do you view that in terms of gaining the best value you can from a trade?
Sure. Now, in the past, I've been pretty against trading in a rookie after their first price rise. I've thought that it's generally not a great idea, but it's actually worked a couple of times this year already. I know that a lot of people did it with Kerno after the Collingwood game, and he was already risen to 200,000, and they'd be very happy they made that trade. I know that I did it with Smith when Code went down. I brought Brody Smith in, and I've been pretty happy with that as well. He's only gone up sort of 60 or 70 since then, but still very happy I made that trade. I ended up getting the best rookie in, and with Davis out, you'd think that Thompson would play quite a bit. What do you think about it?
Yeah, I personally probably like the move. Thompson looks like quite a good rookie. Obviously, I'm more sold post his 126, but I did go on to the Adelaide boards before I brought Thompson in, and that was pretty much what swung me. He's a skillful player that's willing to take the game on, and playing in the back line for Adelaide, there's been a bit more ball there in recent weeks. So Thompson's actually been able to just make points off, you know, good kicks out of the back line. And like 73, two scores in the 70s and one 126 is pretty much proves that he's going to be a good scorer. Like, you don't fluke three good games in a row in terms of Supercoach scoring. I do like him as a pick, and if I had Otten, I'd be looking at Thompson. But another rookie we can look at is Hibbard, who debuted on the weekend for Essendon, and he also looks like quite a good option. As an Essendon supporter, what do you have to say about Hibbard, Mark?
I've been very impressed with Hibbard, actually. I know that he has a pretty good pedigree. He was in our best 21 round one this year, but was injured, so didn't end up playing. Now that he's there, I expect him to keep playing. I think he's not going to score as well as Thompson. I'm really expecting probably a 60 average from Hibbert at this stage. But I've been very impressed. It's very hard to judge based on the one game that he did play, because I was at that game and Gold Coast were pretty pathetic and the ball really didn't get into the defence very much. He did take a couple of nice marks floating across the across the front of Prax. There's got to be some doubts on his job security that I know we've got Myers coming back in the next week or two that might compete for him for a spot. But I think he's a pretty good player, and I think that he will probably do well enough to cement his spot in that Essendon back line. So personally, if I had Otten, I'd probably go Hibbert over Thompson this week.
Yep. I do like Hibbert, especially because he has that back for mid MPP. And even if you do bring him into the back line, we'll talk about Ben Jacobs in a bit, but Ben Jacobs might be getting some games pretty soon. And he's also a back mid MPP that we're looking pretty closely at before he got Glange. Now, we'll want to be covering our bases this year in terms of getting good, the best, you know, D8 that you can, the best M7 that you can, and high-scoring rookies, and we expect Ben Jacobs to be one of those guys. Hibbert allows you to bring Ben Jacobs into your D8 position, which I quite like, because if you brought Jacobs into your midfield without Hibbert, in order for him to play in your back line, you'd be switching with a premium, you know, you'd like Goddard, and you wouldn't actually be serving as that D8, if you know what I mean, Mark.
Yeah, except you are forgetting the one player that you don't have being Heppel that I can switch him with up back. I just wanted to rub that in since you're doing so well.
Thank you.
So, yeah, look, I rate Hibbert. I don't rate his scoring potential hugely, but I think he will be a pretty solid pick and will definitely score you money. And I just think that extra 80,000 at this stage could be used really well for your upgrades. So I think you might need that. And I'd be making the choice to go for Hibbert over Thompson at the moment.
All right.
Brings us to another player we might be looking at downgrading this week, which is Nick Digan. Now, I think I said a couple of weeks on the show that I expected to keep him probably longer term and past the bye. I thought, I think preseason he averaged about 90, and I went to the Essendon Carlton game and I was really, really impressed with what I saw, and I think he scored 110, and I expected a bit more of that to keep coming and for him to average 80 plus, but then he's put in two stinkers SC-wise since then, and 42 on the weekend against the Swans, and looks like, yeah, I think his break-even's about 89, so it might be the week to move him on.
Yeah, I know a lot of coaches are looking at the upgrade one rookie, downgrade one rookie, and Dagan's actually probably the number one candidate for getting that boot, seeing as he does have that high break-even, as you mentioned. I think it really, the only reason, sort of, if you're doing that double trade this week with two rookies to not downgrade Dagan is that maybe you want Isles and Wallace, who we'll talk about when we get to the midfielders, that if you want to downgrade one of your midfielders down to Isles or Wallace, that maybe Dagan won't actually get the boot and he'll stay for another week up till his round 8 bye.
Sure. I think the best case scenario is that you do wait with Dagan this week because it gives you an extra week to see Hibbert, and he's probably only going to lose about 10,000 even if he scores 50. So you're really not going to lose too much by waiting on that one, and then you do get him rid of him just before the bye. There is another option coming up back, which is, it's been said in the, I think it's in the paper today, that Puopolo will play this week for the Hawks. Now, there was big raps on him preseason. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, obviously, with Bruce got out for the next, I think, 6 weeks with that PCL injury, Puopolo is getting a game this weekend, and his job security obviously looks pretty good for at least this next, you know, sort of 6 to 7 weeks. As he's a mature age player, which is why, you know, he got looked at so closely in the preseason, and is skillful user of the ball. The only issue is, even in the NAB Cup, which we all know is a step down for AFL, it did seem to struggle in terms of actually getting the pill to his, like getting the ball. He was good when he actually got it, but he didn't get as much as we would have hoped for. I'm not sure he'll be the best fantasy scorer, but you know he is playing in a good team. His job security seems sound for now, and he's a mature age player, so there's really not too much to dislike there.
Yeah, I think he's fairly high on my radar. I saw today he's been averaging 99 Supercoach in the VFL so far this season, which is pretty good scoring. You don't expect him to do the same at AFL, but if you can bring anything like that, it'd be pretty good. So definitely someone to keep on your radar and have a look at this weekend. Should we move on to the midfielders?
We'll just Ben Jacob. We just covered him before. So he's that back mid guy that he played his first game for the Sandfall this weekend after finally recovering from that glandular fever. So I think he racked up 22 possessions, and people were quite impressed with his game enough so that, you know, he got a ride up, you know, the week he got back from injury. So definitely look at him coming into a pretty weak Port Adelaide side. Even, you know, this or next week.
Yeah. You think with the culture problems that they're talking about and the fact that they basically have to blood youngsters from here, that Jacobs would get a very good shot. And I think most good super coaches will bring him into their team in the next few weeks if that's when he starts playing.
Yeah. I remember he was in, you know, 80% of teams before he went down with injuries. So
sure.
Yep. We'll move on to the midfield now, and I guess the biggest thing to talk about is the two rookies who we have on the bubble, Mitch Wallace and Sam Iles. Both look like you know, good fantasy rookie prospects and guys that we want to get on. So, Mark, do you want to kick us off with who you reckon would be the better pick?
Sure. I know we were talking in the pre-show, and we actually came to different conclusions on this, so I might put the case for Wallace out there. I think... I'd see Wallace as potentially being one of the highest scoring rookies that comes through this year. Obviously, he's probably not going to match Curno, but I think he could easily match Libba. Once he gets the job in the midfield for the Bulldogs, he's an absolute fantasy star as a junior. He scored 165 Supercoach points a couple of weeks ago in the VFL in only like his fourth game at senior footy. He has a great ability to get the ball. I know that he was only a sub in his first game, so he scored very, very low. He played mainly forward against the Collingwood side on the weekend, and that was against the Premiers, so it's going to be tough for him to score. I know there was a few queries on his kicking in that game, and that was reflected in his low Supercoach score relative to Dream Team, but I think he will... Eads mentioned that he'll probably play a lot more midfield time this week, and that's going to have a great benefit for his scoring. There's concerns over his job security, but I think he's the sort of player, much like Libba, where if you give him a shot, it's going to be very hard to take that spot back off him. And Eid has said that they want to expose him as much as possible. So although he might not play every game, you'd think that he'd get a fair chunk of games this year.
Yeah, and he was selected ahead of Libba at pick 22, and people were touting as a top 10. So, you know, top 10 pick who's on the bubble at 103,000 is something we should look very, very closely at. And
one thing we should just mention is that you could probably almost wait a week on Wallace, because he scored so poorly in his first game. He only scored 22, that he's not actually going to go up that much. So if you do have to wait on someone, you could actually wait on Wallace. Probably unlikely to go up more than 30,000 this week.
Yeah. That's a very good point too, Mark, because what he'll be, you know, between 10 to 20K more than Iles is this week, next week. So, that's a very, very good point. A point towards Iles in terms of Iles v. Wallace. Now, we talked about Iles last week in the live chat that we had going on, and he's won two best and fairest in his last 2 years. He played in the VFL for Box Hill Hawks in the 2009 season, and he won their BNF that year and came third with Pods Yadley in the JJ Liston that year. And then the following year in 2010, he entered, played with Gold Coast in the VFL and again got their best and fairest. So clearly, you know, he's probably he's not at VFL level. He's ready to play in the big leagues. And age 25, you'd think he'd be a pretty good scorer. Unfortunately, his first two games probably haven't demonstrated that. I think he scored two in the 50s, a 54 and 67. So in terms of scoring potential, it's not looking great so far. But I know, Mark, you had a comment in the pre-show that you might want to pull out, that you think that Iles might be a player that'll build as the season goes on.
Sure, he had a bit of a limited preseason because of a hip injury. He seems to be building fitness. I know that a few of them take a few games to actually get into it. He looked like a bigger body. I think that the Suns are going to play him every game for the rest of the year if he's fit, and I think that he will work his way into the AFL level and start getting a bit more of the ball. My main concern on Isles about his scoring potential is that when he won the best and fairest, he was an outside mid and was really getting a lot of the handball receives. I wonder whether he would still get that at Gold Coast, or that actually goes to other players now, like your Abbott, or your Riscatellis, or your Brennans, that sort of player. But yeah, I think, look, he's one of the better rookies that we're going to see coming through, and his job security is probably the most attractive thing about him.
Yeah, that's a very good point, Mark. And in the Gold Coast team, you know, you're not going to be getting those handball receives like he did playing in the VFL level. I think the thing is, I definitely agree with your comment that he'll take time to build. He didn't play any NAB Cup games, so this is pretty much, you know, his first. Oh, he did play 7 games at Collingwood, but you know, getting back used to that speed that AFL brings, especially coming off a hip injury. So I do like him, and I think the fact that the point that you brought up that Wallace won't go up too much in price probably has me leaning towards Isles, and then perhaps looking to bring Wallace in next week as well. While we're on the topic of midfield rookies, we should talk about two other players who have been mentioned in the Twitter world today, and that's Isaac Smith and Tendai Mazungu, both players who are looking like they'll be getting their debuts pretty soon.
Yep, I think that Isaac Smith was pretty much guaranteed a spot this week, so there's some word that he'll be the sub this week because he played on the weekend for the Box Hill Hawks, whereas a few of the other players like Puopolo actually were rested, like the senior side had the bye. So I'm pretty sure he's played this week. He's a very much an impact sort of player. He's very quick, and I have big concerns over his job security personally. I think that once Cyril's back, he's going to knock Smith out pretty quickly. But then again, he could make a quick impact at AFL level and might spark the Hawks, which might improve his chances. I know that he stepped up to VFL level last year from basically Country League and just dominated once he stepped up. So definitely one to keep an eye on this weekend and probably the week after. You definitely want to wait a couple of weeks on him, though.
Yeah, I think his rapid improvement that has brought him to AFL level that quickly can either be, you know, a good or a bad thing. Either you know he is still gonna grab the bull by the horns when in the AFL level and show a lot because he has improved drastically in a short period of time. Alternatively, that jump could just simply be too big for him, and he's not quite ready for that level. And I do share your concerns, Mark, that he might drop off, especially once Rioli gets back in. But he is mid-forward MPP, which is definitely a good thing. You can swap him with your Pavliches and your goods and the like, so that's a plus to him. And Tendai Mazungu, even though he's listed at 4 to 5 weeks, I believe, on the injury list, he is back to full training.
Yep. And there's even talk of him playing VFL in the next couple of, Waffle in the next couple of weeks, which has actually happened a few times. I know that Jacobs was on the injury list a couple of weeks ago, even though he was playing Sample reserves. So Harvey was on the media today saying that he could only be 3 or 4 weeks away from actually playing for the Dockers. So very exciting because there was massive raps on this guy in the preseason, and he showed a pretty good scoring potential, possibly even up to 90 or so. So if he gets a game, I think pretty much everyone's going to jump on.
Yep. So we'll look at the midfield upgrade targets this week, seeing as a lot of people will be looking to make their first upgrade in the midfield. And we'll start off with Joel Selwood, who, as we all know, started the season with that unfortunate head concussion, and he went off the ground only with 24 points. The last three games he's played have delivered 134, 95, and 115. And I think nobody will rebuke the fact that Selwood just keeps getting better and better. And I don't doubt personally that he's improved yet again this season. His agility looks better than ever, and he's a very consistent player that will score you a good amount week in, week out, and price only at $517,000, you'd think he's under the odds.
Yep, I'm still totally unsure how you dodged this guy in the preseason given his slow start, because you were absolutely all over him. I think at his current price, he's almost too good to ignore. Averaged 117 last year, 110 the year before. Geelong still seem like they're going pretty well this year. I would expect him to improve on last year's average from here on in. He's got the ruse at Skilled this week, and I know he loves Skilled Stadium. I think his average recently is 130-plus at Skilled. So you could almost – you could bring him in. If you brought him in this week, you could make him your captain and be pretty happy about it.
Yep. Excuse me. Next player we're going to look at is David Mundy. Now, fair to say he's been a fair surprise package. He started the season at, I think, about 457,000,
yeah,
up to 522. He's averaging 128. That's fairly ridiculous. 138, 113, 132, 121, and 140. Now, he improved drastically last year, won their best and fairest. There were questions whether he was going to stay at Fremantle. He did, and he's doing brilliantly so far this year, leading the midfield. What do you reckon? Is he a worthwhile pick? It's not often that we actually look at premiums on the improve and so looking so seriously at bringing them in, as compared to guys like Joel Selwood, who we know are proven performers.
Yep, absolutely. That's a very valid point there. And there has to be something really particular and really special about the situation to justify bringing him in. Like, a comparable example would be Scott Thompson, who's averaging 118 so far this year, started off at a very similar price to Mundy, yet I hear a lot more talk about Mundy this week than I do about Thompson. Why do you think that is, Marcus?
Yeah, I'd probably – that's an odd one. I've been probably a bit more of a fan of Thompson than most, and we've mentioned a few times about his draw. Like, I haven't had he didn't fit into my structure, and I didn't have the nuts to go with him, obviously, but – he is also a good pick. The thing I think that, in terms of just watching them play, Mundy's impact on the game seems a lot more profound to me. Thompson looks a lot more like just a collector in the games, if that makes sense. I know you don't like to talk about what players actually look like, but to me, I feel that probably people have just been more impressed by Mundy's style of play than Scott Thompson does. He's not a particularly flashy or impressive player.
Sure. Now, Mundy's average last year was 93. He's currently averaging 128. We're not saying that he can continue to average that much, I don't think. But Fremantle have really surprised me this year. I didn't quite expect them to be so good considering the injuries that they have in the past. Those injuries would have hurt Fremantle more than they have this year. And I kind of feel like Mundy's taking Barlow's points, and I don't expect Barlow to come back and dominate quite like he did last year, so I think he can continue it. I think Fremantle will have a really good draw through the middle of the year, and I think there's no reason why he can't average more than 115, so he's pretty well priced at the moment for that.
Yep, and he's currently selected by, under 11,000 coaches. So the uniqueness factor definitely is a plus point, especially, if you're down back chasing the guys up front.
Yeah, and as a break-even of 91 this week, I think. So this is probably the week you want to get him before he plays the Tigers.
Yep, for sure. Now, the next player we're going to look at, I know you like more than most, Mark, and that's Nick Del Santo. So why don't you run us through him?
Yeah, people in the preseason were telling me that, oh no, Nick's going to be the one that drops off. But I think Del Santo was probably a premium before St Kilda became really, really good, whereas in the last couple of years, whereas Montagna was probably the biggest beneficiary of St Kilda's rise up the ladder. Del Santo's looked really good so far this year. He has down games. That's the one thing about Del Santo. He has the big games, like on the weekend, where he scored 150 in a losing side. But he will have a bad game here or there, so his price will come down at a different point during the season. I think he's a pretty good pick. I'd still like to see a little bit more out of the Saints before I picked him up. I really like my midfielders to come from top four sides, and I'm not convinced that the Saints are one of them at the moment.
Yeah, I've even been seeing people dropping St Kilda from their top eight predictions, things as drastic as that. So you're right. The when we're talking about bringing in these premiums, any sort of question mark is enough, to sort of push you away from them. And we've still got a lot more premiums to discuss. I'm probably not as big a fan of Del Santo, but in his fourth year of AFL football, I believe he averaged 132 or something ridiculous like that. So he is a proven performer before St Kilda got good, as you covered.
Yep, so the next player we're going to look at is Jimmy Bartel, who I have him in my dream team, and he will be my dream team captain this week, more than likely. But I didn't end up picking him in Supercoach, and look, I'm regretting that at the moment. He's had a flying start to the year. He does have a down game like he did against the Swans, where he got 75. I think you can almost wait a week on Bartel. It's an interesting situation because you can wait a week because of his break-even, but he has North Melbourne at home this week, which is a huge scorer for him, and then Collingwood the week after, which might be a bit of trouble. So, ripping pick, it's just whether you think that he's better than Selwood or not, and Selwood seems the slightly safer pick to me.
In terms of, excuse me, in terms of these two players, I'm probably... If I had to predict their average, I mean, really be splitting hairs, that's how little I could probably differentiate between the two in terms of scoring potential right now. So that probably has me leaning towards Selwood because in terms of whose price fluctuates, Bartel every season seems to fall under 470,000 at some stage, at least the last two seasons or three seasons he's done that. Not since his Brownlow year has he managed to keep his price up. So at 518 and Selwood being at 517, I think, was that right?
Yep.
Yeah. I'd probably pick Selwood because Bartel might drop in the future and provide another target to hit that's underpriced. That'd be my only reasoning picking between the two. The next player we're going to look at is from West Coast, who have by far and away exceeded expectations so far this year. Pritis is averaging 123.6. What was he started the year off at how much?
I think he was reasonably premiumly priced, wasn't he?
Total change. I think he's at the exact price he started off at.
Yeah, because he had...
I'm getting confused with Embley, sorry.
Yeah, Embley was very cheap, and Embley's gone back to vintage form from him. Pritis has had 128, 107, 107, 134, and 142. He has been threatening to become a Supercoach premium for a few years. Average of 104 and 108 in the last couple of years. He's improved by five or so every year. No reason why he can't go up to 113, 115 this year. West Coast are definitely an improving side. They look much, much better than they have, especially last year. My concern is that West Coast have one of the toughest draws left. Just in the short term, they've got Essendon, Bulldogs, Collingwood, and Fremantle in the next 4 weeks. It does get a bit easier for the three games after that, but they've got a really tough draw. That worries me a little bit. It also worries me that they're probably competing for spots 7, 8, 9, 10 sort of thing. So, again, not a top four side, but he's definitely not the worst pick out there and fairly unique.
Yeah, I think people tend to forget how old Pritis actually is, but just because he's been a premium for that long, but he actually, he was so good even from a young age. Pritis is actually 26, which is pretty much perfect time to break out into that ultra premium status that we're talking about. The really high scorers, the peak of their career, he's pretty much at that point now. So my only thing is he is 530,000. So you're taking a fairly big risk just because he's going to be unique for you and compared to the other guys that you'd be more certain about, he is a risk.
Yep.
Next player we're going to look at is Matthew Boyd. Now he's averaging 121 so far this year. He scored 108 last game, priced at 551,000, which is probably his biggest drawback right now. I probably would say leave him. They're better options at a slightly lower price at this stage.
Yep, I'm not at all surprised to see Boyd killing it this year. I know he had a big game a couple of weeks ago, but wouldn't surprise me to see him be the one to boost his average up to 120-odd this year. So, good pick, but yeah, there are better picks. I'd rather pick Selwood at the cheaper price.
All right, and now the last two premiums we're going to look at in the midfield are both from Carlton, Chris Judd and Mark Murphy. Now, Judd had probably one of his best games of his career over the weekend. Massive amount of contested possessions, I believe 25, picked up 154 Supercoach points and dragged his team over the line. Now, priced at 507,000, Judd's pretty much a steal.
Yeah, especially the fact that Carlton seemed to be doing so well this year, you'd expect a little bit of a bump in their premiums. Personally, as most of the listeners would know, I went with Mark Murphy, huge fan of Murphy, who had a shoulder injury on the weekend, but the reports are he'll play this week and he should be all right. So I really like having one of those two guys in your team, especially seeing as we're trying to diversify in the midfield this year where we don't want players all from the one team because of buys, etc. So I would be looking at getting one of those guys this week. They're priced within $100 of each other. And at this stage, they're averaging 113 and 114, so it's tough to split them.
Yeah, it definitely is. I'd probably have Judd just ahead just because, you know, he has had a better pedigree, but Murphy is definitely having, on track to have the best season of his career so far. He's been very impressive. Supercoach scoring probably hasn't quite reflected the improvement he's made as a player. Would you say that's a fair call, Mark?
Yeah. I was kind of hoping for another maybe 5 points from him, but I think he scored 77 a couple of weeks ago, which really shocked me because I remember last year or the year before where it was impossible for him to score less than 100. So I was kind of expecting that sort of consistency from him. It hasn't quite eventuated so far.
All right, we'll move right on to the forwards now. Nick Riewoldt is right up for discussion at the moment. He's not been living up to what we expected, having paid, you know, $530,000 or something ridiculous for him. He's currently averaging 85. He's only had the one score above 112. Scored 47 last week, and obviously he had that concussion and never came back on in the fourth quarter, so we can excuse him for that. But he's currently priced at $450,000, having already dropped 80K. His break-even's 173, so he's set to plummet even more. Mark, what do you reckon? Worth the trade, or would you just hang on to this guy because he's absolutely sick player?
Yeah, I don't think that you can trade Nick Riewoldt. I know that he's one of the most traded-out players on Supercoach Gold this week, but I really think that you'd be making a mistake to get rid of him at his current price. Like, who else are you really going to bring in that's going to score much better than him? I know on the front of the Fantasy Freako this morning when I was looking at it, they showed Nick Riewoldt's start to the season, and he had a very similar start in 2007, which was like his highest averaging season. So don't be too worried. He could easily still dominate this year and put in a couple of really big games. You could score a couple of 160s and be out of your price range very, very quickly if you trade him out. So I think the fact that everyone has him, you don't really lose by keeping him, and I do expect him to improve.
Now, the next two players up for discussion are both players that are currently under an injury cloud, both highly selected players, and both look like great selections until their injury hit. Now, Cyril Rioli and Sean Higgins both look like they're going to miss this weekend. I think if you had either of them, or if you had both of them, I know a lot of people actually already fiddled with them last week, may have traded them out. But at currently sitting, if you'd already copped one of their outs, what do you reckon? Would you hold on, or would you decide it's time to cut your losses and let go of these injury prone players?
Yeah, I think that I don't really feel like I know a lot more about Rioli's injury this week than I did last week, even though I didn't know much last week. It seemed like a minor hamstring injury, and I expect him to be back next week or the week after. I think if you held through the bye, then you should probably just hold again if you can. If you have Rioli and Higgins, you should probably trade one of them. I would be looking to trade Higgins because he's made money, not lost money, and he also is more likely to miss games later on in the year, and they're also more likely to be a week at a time, 2 weeks at a time, or something like that. They've said that Higgins has got the same groin complaint he's had in previous years, so that worries me a bit. I personally traded Rioli out last week. I did a double trade in my forward line, brought in Joel Tippett and Jack Riewoldt. So Rioli has a break even this week of 160. I see him possibly getting below 400,000, and it's not beyond possibility that I'll actually bring him back in. I think he was a great starting pick, but I got really unlucky that he got suspended and then injured. So I'm pretty disappointed about that whole thing. It's had a pretty big impact on my overall ranking, I think. But yeah, if I had him at the moment, I'd probably look at keeping him. What about yourself?
Yeah, I think if you held through the bye, then I'd probably agree with you that if you only have one of Rioli and Higgins, then I'd probably Oh, wait, are we talking about having both of them or one in this?
Well, we can talk about both situations.
Yeah,
so.
Or I think if I just had Rioli, I'd probably hold. I agree with you there. But if I had both... I had Higgins personally, and I traded him out last week. The fact that you did bring up that point that he is reported to have that same groin niggle, which we know has affected him not only in terms of missing games, but actually during games, his output is significantly affected, and so is his time on ground. And even more concerning this year because, you know, we have the subs going on. So if you're in doubt, they'll just take you off.
You've got to remember that against Fremantle as well, I think he was sitting on like 20 or 30 at three-quarter time, and it was only a really big last quarter that got him up to, I think it was 90 in the end. So without that, he wouldn't even be looking like such a great scorer at the moment. So,
yeah, so I'd be inclined to trade Higgins out, and obviously it's reflective of what I've actually done myself last week.
Did you bring in
Jack Riewoldt, yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm actually going to quite enjoy having Jack Riewoldt in my side. I know he's probably going to be frustrating at times, but just the way he flies for the ball, and it's going to be quite a lot of fun barracking for him for the rest of the year.
Okay, we'll move on to looking at the forward premiums now, and the three guys that we want to look at. We'll start off by the absolute superstar of the forward line, and that's Paul Chapman. I don't think anyone doubts, you know, that this bloke's going to average 115 when he's actually playing for the Geelong side. The only concern is his injury history. Last year, of course, he didn't actually do a hamstring, but he was rested for one game, I do believe. This year, he's averaging 115.5 so far. His break even is 110, and they're playing North Melbourne at Skilled. So, as Mark has mentioned a few times, all the premiums are in for a fairly big score. And Chapman actually seems to be, to me anyway, as a Geelong supporter, numero uno this year. You know, he's the guy that we'll go to if we need a game winner, and we all know that's where the most points come from in Supercoach. Definitely think that if you don't have Chapman and he scores well and he stays injury free, you can't win the 50K, and yeah. That probably has me saying that people should be definitely looking to bring him in.
Yeah, I agree with that. If he does stay fit, the team that wins will have Chapman in their team. He's that far ahead of the other forwards, although there are a couple that can get near him, but yeah, you'd really want to have Chappie. It's interesting to decide when to do it. I plan on bringing him into my side, but I don't actually plan on doing it this week. I think he's not fully priced, but he's quite highly priced. I'm just hoping he doesn't score like 150 this week against North, which he's very capable of doing. And if I did bring him in this week, I'd be making him my captain. I think that he's a really good pick, and I will be looking at bringing him in soon, just not this week personally, but that's not saying that other people shouldn't do that.
Yeah, and I suppose one of the reasons that people might not pick Chapman this week is because there's another bloke who's doing very well so far this season, and that's, I think, five-time All-Australian Matthew Pavlich is priced at 508,000.
Yeah, so you get Pavlich 32,000 cheaper. It's quite interesting comparing their scoring histories. I know Chappie's been about 115 for the last couple of years. Pavlich has been 99 average for the last couple of years, whereas he's a better player than that, and he's seems to be almost an exclusive midfielder this year and picking up 30-plus possessions in games. And he hasn't dominated from the start. I know he scored 150-odd in his last game, which might be making him look better than he actually is, but he's had a pretty strong start to the year and someone that I'd also be looking to get into my team at some point.
With Mundy, Fife, and Hill and Duffield, I would have hoped, you know, that he'd be playing in the forward line this year. And I remember talking in the preseason that he had lost weight, and I was pretty sure he was going to spend a majority of the time in the mids, and he's, as Mark covered, he's certainly been doing that so far. I'd probably agree with Mark in that I think you're leaning more towards Chapman if you are looking to upgrade between the two.
Yeah, personally I am. I think that Chapman, I think that their upside is about the same. I think Chapman is more likely to reach that upside.
Yep.
Out of the two.
Yep.
But then again, like, Chappie does have the injury concerns. The Pav probably doesn't have the same. Pav doesn't miss games, but he does play with a niggle more than Chappie does.
Now, the last guy we want to look at is Brent Harvey. The old fella is actually doing really well so far, averaging 107. His only bad game came in round one where he scored 64, but his last three, 116, 125, and 129. Now, certainly didn't expect him to do that. And by the way, his goal on the weekend was quite superb.
Yeah, he's been trying to get that one for a while. Did you see him on game day the next day?
No, I didn't. What happened?
It was hilarious. He was... just like, so the guest came on and he's like, hey, did you see my goal on the weekend? I deserve goal of the year for that. And did you see how well I played? And yeah, he was talking it up. It was very funny. And yeah, it was all good natured stuff. I thought really long and hard about bringing Harvey in last week instead of Jack Riewoldt. The main reason I didn't was because I knew I was going to really need the money, the extra money later. I think he's a super pick. At the moment, I have Chapman and Pavlich ahead of Harvey. Harvey has great durability. I think he's only missed games because of that horrible elbow injury he did a couple of years ago in the last 5 or 6 years. Other than that, he plays every week. I think he'll score pretty well. He's not people. The tagger goes to Swallow these days normally instead of Harvey. I expect him to do pretty well this year.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I like him as a pick, but similar to you, I probably have Chapman and Pavlich ahead. So I guess that wraps it up. It's been a pretty long show, but covered a lot of important topics, I think. So. It was a good show.
Yeah, it was. A couple of things I wanted to mention. We are on Twitter these days. I need some followers, so go at FBDonkey on Twitter. Hook me up. Send me a message if you want. And the other thing I wanted to plug was Dr. Bone's Diagnosis, which you have on the blog page at the moment. I think this is the second or third one that he's done. It's very much like the Fantasy Freako, but for Supercoach, and it's got a few more extra details as well, like break evens in there and time on ground and points per dollar, the movement, everything like that. It's got commentary, and I think it's a brilliant resource that you guys have on the front page that I've been using a lot lately.
Yeah, he's done a superb job with it, and if any of you have any article ideas you'd like to send in, then go ahead and email me at admin@ycc.com.au, because good content should definitely be shared with the community, and good work on Dr. Bones, who's also a mod on the forum. So head over there and join us for some good discussion. It's been, might as well plug our leagues, because we have 7 of the top 25 leagues so far this year, and that is an exceptional effort considering that, you know, 4 of those leagues are actually public leagues. So that's you, our community, doing very well in Supercoach, and we certainly love seeing the YCC tags up on the leaderboard. So keep pushing hard, guys, and we're loving your work so far. And
yeah, we actually have 4 of the top 5 leagues, so absolute domination by YCC at the moment. And I think that shows how well people plan for the buyers, and hope we can keep it up. It's been a great community effort so far.
Yeah. So I guess that's all for this week. Enjoy the first round we've had in the last few without 3 teams out with a bye. So I'm sure they'll bring a lot of smiles to the super coaches around the country. Yeah, best of luck.
Hey, footy this week.
Sorry?
Monday football this week. That'll be a bit different. Hopefully I can get a couple of 100 points back on you, Marcus. I know I really need to.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to that too. All right. See you guys.
Yeah. Jump up, let's get crazy. Now jump up, let's get crazy.